Hey, everybody, it's Kai. Thanks for listening to Corner Office, our podcast of the same name. Today, we have the rest of my interview with David Zucker. He's the president of television at Scott Free Productions. His company got quite a couple of nods last week when the Emmys were announced. The Emmy nominees, I should say, both for The Good Wife on CBS, a show that is about as traditional a model of television as they come, and also for Man in the High Castle, a series from Amazon that is part of the new TV model. Here he is, David Zucker, and his thoughts on how television works today.
We're expecting you. Won't you have a seat?
Ready to go to work?
David Zucker, good to have you with us.
Pleasure to be here.
Before we turned on the microphones, you said a very interesting thing. You have a little cheat sheet in front of you, and I said, what's up with that? And you said, well, we have so many things going on right now that it's tough to keep track. You have said there is an amazing breadth of buyers out here for your stuff. It's sort of the golden age of doing what you do.
It is an extraordinary time in television, especially as an independent production company. I think it is a period in at least this industry that is unprecedented, where anything is truly possible, where subject matter-wise, in terms of talent that's accessible to you, there is really no place you can't go, in addition to which it is a global business now.
Yeah.
And for our company in particular, that was something we ventured into years ago with Pillars of the Earth, which was the first time we did a project that was based in a European sale where we had no American buyer initially when we went into a $40 million production.
That's a gutsy move.
It was risky, on top of which it was during the economic collapse. But we had had the funding together. We were partnered with a German company, Tandem. And they took the precipitous leap and said, you know what? We have it now. Let's go for it and believe that we're going to have material that people in the U.S. will want. And we lucked into, frankly, when Chris Albrecht landed at Starz, he needed content. The match was there, and it was a great success creatively and financially.
Starz being the network, you guys being the production house. Explain to me, to everybody, I guess, who's not familiar with how it works in the land of independent production companies. Do you guys come up with stuff and pitch it? Do the networks come to you and say, we want X, Y, Z? How does it work?
Well, I mean, that is where it is. It's to use an English term, it's very bespoke in the sense that any of these productions can get put together any number of ways. We can do it the traditional way, which was how Good Wife came into existence, where, you know, the Kings came up with the pitch. We had actually a deal at that time with CBS Paramount Studios. They responded. We all went over together to CBS Network. They bought it. We went through the pilot process and were fortunate enough to get that order. That was very traditional.
Yeah.
Something like Pillars or, for instance, the project that that we've just done and we're delivering to Amazon, our first half-hour single-camera production, Jean-Claude Van Damme piece.
There's a name you haven't heard in a while.
That's right.
Right?
And that was one that in some ways was born of the fact that we are looking in a global marketplace now. And Amazon, like Netflix and a few others, who are very cognizant of the appeal for an international audience, responded to that and sort of picked it up out of the gate.
Are you guys platform's the wrong word. I guess network agnostic. I mean, you do PBS with Mercy Street. You did Amazon with, you're doing it with Jean-Claude and also Man in the High Castle.
At Amazon,
Which I want to come back to in a minute. And also traditional with CBS and The Good Wife and numbers before that. You don't care where it goes. You just run out there.
We're absolutely network agnostic. I mean, the one thing that hasn't changed, I mean, I've been at Scott Free for 15 years now. And the one thing that hasn't changed, even as the business has evolved radically in some respects, is it still begins with the writer. And it still begins with that idea. And you find a partnership with talent that is hopefully mutually enticing. And then I think what's exciting in how the business itself has matured, if that's not the wrong term to use, is that you can really put together these projects in a way that hopefully best serves the production itself. So you want to find a home for it that that project for Mercy Street, for instance, it is the most important production for PBS, trying to take on an American history project, the likes of which they hadn't done in 12 years.
Not the least of which also should be said is following up Downton Abbey.
That's right. Yeah. And for Man in the High Castle at Amazon, it was a very big swing for them, a project that took us 9 years to find a home for in the U.S. Originally, of all things, we'd sold it to the BBC and then brought it back into the U.S. Amazon didn't exist when we started developing that project. So it's the kind of thing where hopefully if you believe and have enthusiasm for the pieces that you're sort of developing with your writing and directing and acting partners, that it's finding the right home and a home that will support that and hopefully allow it to live a good, long and fruitful life as Good Wife got to.
Also, you should not be looking for a short-term payoff, because if you're shopping projects for 9 years, man.
Well, I mean, that is the benefit, perhaps, of just surviving, that the projects don't go into turnaround and get lost. But, I mean, that is one of many things that is so radically different from the business 10 years ago. It used to be, during the time of Good Wife or when we did Numbers, which was our first TV series project, if the network decided not to proceed, that pilot, you know, basically got put on the shelf and had no hope of any kind of future, despite the quality of it, because the scheduling may not accommodate it or they may not have had a particular need for it.
Right.
And that, I think, was one of the big motivating factors for us to want to go independent, because you don't want something that you have such passion for and such determination for that it doesn't find its future. You want to, you know, be able to put that project sort of out into the universe and hopefully with somebody who sort of shares that determination with you.
I get the whole there's never been a better time, right? Because you guys have so many outlets. But is it not also perhaps one of the most competitive times in television?
Well, competitive is one way of putting it. I mean, the way I tend to describe it is there are more possibilities and more opportunities than ever before. There's over 50 buyers, which is frankly extraordinary.
And when you say buyers, you mean networks or outlets for your stuff?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and this is from a time when, you know, I know John Landgraf talked about sort of exponentially how much greater, when he spoke with you, the programming has exploded to a point where we can't really keep track of what even is in the marketplace now. But if you think about when I started, even at Scott Free, I mean, you had your network buyers, and then you had HBO and Showtime, and a few of the basic cable networks. Now, you were always trying to sort of assess the marketplace to say, well, where are our limitations? Because there are certain shows back then you couldn't do. You couldn't do shows that had sort of an international intention, which is why High Castle was hard to lay. You know, even back when in the 90s, you couldn't go into a political show until West Wing sort of changed that. Sure. You couldn't have sort of foreign language and subtitles until Lost and Heroes did that. I mean, you'd see these sort of incremental changes. But I think as I'm certainly no television historian, but one who's sort of been riding sort of the wave, so to speak, as we started becoming and as sort of the fiscal opportunities internationally in some ways changed, that the studios couldn't necessarily rely upon the output, couldn't rely on the same syndication deals. Obviously, Netflix and Amazon all changed the financial mathematics of it.
Right.
From a content standpoint, we've been enormous beneficiaries.
The other thing John Landgraf said, though, the head of FX, when he was on this program, was and the reason we had him on was that he thinks there's a little bit of a television bubble, that it's not sustainable, all this amazing stuff that's getting put out there.
I could not prognosticate whether it's sustainable or not. It certainly feels like a bubble. To me, it kind of feels, and this may be too much of a hackneyed analogy, but it kind of feels a little bit like the Transcontinental Railroad. It's like back when there were just, you know, the four networks and some of the basic cable outlets. It's like there was a grid. It was all very predictable. You had a sense of what it is they wanted to buy, what their audience, who their audience was, you know, what the ratings analysis would be. And all of that could be sort of understood, and it was tenable to some reasonable degree. Now, it's an exciting place because you are venturing out into the wilderness, not knowing when you're dealing with an Amazon, you know, who is literally, they are their own marketplace. They're interested in their library.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't release and market shows the same way that the traditional entertainment companies
right.
do. Obviously, PBS has a very different sort of analytical process to what their needs and wants are. So to your point, it's competitive, but in some ways, it is more challenging than ever because we have to come to understand individually with each of these buyers, well, how do you operate and what are your needs? And how do we make sure that the program we're working on together services that?
Must be crazy making for a guy who's the head of television at an independent production company. You have to deal with all these discrete variables.
Well, I mean, it can be crazy making. It certainly can be exasperating at times. But if you accept the premise that this is sort of a new relationship. If you look at it in some ways as if, okay, let's assume we speak the same language, but the way we develop programming in America and the way they develop programming in the UK is fundamentally different. So if you go into it thinking, okay, well, this may be France, this may be Germany, and understand that we have to listen to what your needs, what your wants, and what your interest in this program is, as much as hopefully they'll listen to
right.
how it is we feel we can best go about producing and creating this show for them, then you can have happy results.
You're the head of television.
Mm-hmm.
You guys also do film stuff. The
right.
question, though, is what's the difference between TV and film when we're all watching it on basically any kind of device we want? Is there a distinction? I mean, your multi-part things are movies, you
right.
know?
I mean, it's a very interesting question. From a standpoint of development and production, there is ever smaller of a gap
yeah.
between the two. You look at the quality of work that's being done, and you know, at a time it was sort of distinguished by talent, and then you get sort of Ridley and the Martin Scorsese's
right,
and people
right,
coming
right, right.
in. So it's like there suddenly is no barrier there, and same on the acting front. And then there was, well, it's a budgetary question. Can we afford the same quality of visual effects? Can we afford the same kind of shooting schedule? And that, in some ways, is, depending upon your buyer, that playing field's getting leveled more. I can't speak to the film business. I've never worked in it before. But I think in some ways, all I can recognize is that a lot of the talent there frustrated by some of the limitations that exist now in how film is distributed are seeing the richer opportunities to tell the stories they really want to tell in television because we don't have those format restrictions anymore either. I mean,
right,
we used
right,
to be
right.
22 episodes. We used to be 10.
Yeah.
We used to be 13. Now you can be 6. You can be 8. You can be 2. You can be 4. It's whatever is in best service of the story. So the sense I get from the feature people coming over is that there is understandably a prevailing frustration in the fact that, as you acknowledge, the way people are accessing this content is really sort of dictating the term now. And what that portends for the film business, I have no idea. But I think the premise of your question is sort of proved in the people who are coming through our door in television
yeah.
each day, which is anything is approachable.
All right. Since I have you in the studio, and I'm a huge Man on the High Castle fan, hello, season two, when?
Season two, well, I don't know if they're going to announce it at Comic-Con, but...
You can announce it here. It'd be all right.
And get my hand in some other thing slapped. But I believe it will be sometime at the end of this year.
All right.
We're halfway into it.
All right, we're going to go with that. David Zucker is the president of television at Scott Free Productions. David, thanks very much.
A pleasure to talk to you. Thanks.
That's it for this episode of Corner Office. Thanks for listening. If you like how we're doing on these things, leave us a review on iTunes, or you can tweet me and tell me how you think we're doing. I'm at Kai Rizdahl. You can get the show at Marketplace. Thanks a lot.